Wide Margins, Episode 6, Peruvian Folklore. Hi, everybody. We're going to take a little break from our series on the judges so that we can listen to a conversation I was able to have with my brother Barton, who was on furlough from the mission field in Peru where he works and where he has been for the last 10 years. If you've never met my brother or heard of my brother, I'm very proud of him. He's done a lot of good work spreading the gospel down in Peru, specifically in Cusco, where he has worked with the mission team, as I said, for 10 years. Peru is a really interesting country, especially Cusco. Cusco is the ancient Inca capital. It's near Machu Picchu. If you've ever heard of Cusco, that's probably why. Big tourist attraction nowadays. Machu Picchu is some ancient Inca ruins that have been well preserved. You can walk around and really get a feel of what life was like for some of the upper echelons of Peruvian society back before the conquistadors came and just wiped it all away. Actually, that's not accurate. There are a lot of vestiges of Inca civilization mixed in with the old Spanish Catholicism and a lot of other things, which makes for an interesting conversation about how mankind all over the world has groped for the ultimate, groped for God, the underlying reality, and without revelation has maybe gotten hints of it and glimpses of it, but has not fully gotten there. Barton had a lot of interesting stories and words and folklore, cultural practices and religious practices to share along that line. And so I really wanted you to hear this because it's interesting stuff I don't think you get to hear on a regular basis. So this is my brother Barton and me talking about Peruvian folklore. I hope you enjoy. All right, now I've been looking forward to this episode for a long time. I have a rare opportunity to be here with my brother, Barton Kaiser. Barton, welcome. I'm glad you're here. This was not easy to do because we have lots of kids between us. You have four. I have only two.
Yep. But I'm excited to be here. I've heard about this podcast and listened to the 66 podcast.
Yeah.
Enjoyed that. Still up. So I'm excited about being here today and being a part of this. I like the topic too.
Yeah, I want to get to that in a minute, but I want to explain to everybody who doesn't already know. I mean, you're world famous, but just in case you don't know who Barton is, Barton has been in Peru for almost 10 years working as a missionary in the city of Cusco, and there are all kinds of topics that we could cover. We had only time for one, and so because he's been down in that culture for so long, learning the languages, I mean, we'll talk about the different languages in a minute, I think. But learning Spanish, definitely, and then also some of the other things that are spoken down there. You have a unique perspective on that because you have an American point of view, but you have been saturated in this culture for like 10 years. So because of that, there's a concept I want to play with today that I think will be interesting. I hope it will be. We haven't had a whole lot of time to talk about it. Let me introduce it. It's the idea that all cultures, whether they've been introduced to the gospel or not, incidentally or accidentally stumble upon the gospel. And you can find this in places in their art, in their music, what else, in their language, in the way that they live, the things they do without really knowing that they're doing it. And I think the first time I heard of this idea was through J.R.R. Tolkien, who of course wrote The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. He says that the gospel story of Jesus is not just one more great story pointing to the underlying reality. Instead, he says the gospel story of Jesus is the underlying reality to which all other stories and cultures and myths point. So let me just read a direct quotation from him to get the idea straight. The peculiar quality of the joy in a successful fantasy can be thus explained as a sudden glimpse of the underlying reality or truth. The Gospels contain a story of a larger kind, which embraces all the essence of fairy stories. There is no tale ever told that men would rather find was true, and none which so many skeptical men have accepted as true on its own merits. That was a quote that I could find quickly. It's probably not the best one. I think also, Barton, correct me if I'm wrong, this was a big part of C.S. Lewis's conversion. A lot of people are familiar with the friendship between Tolkien and Lewis, and they both were interested in myth, medieval literature, and were talking, and Tolkien put this idea out there that, you know, all the myths that you love are really about the underlying reality, and people are touching on that even without even knowing it, because these stories ring true in that deep way that's inside all of us. I wondered if maybe there were some touch points in Inca culture, in Peruvian culture, that come to your mind on that. Before I get to that, I want to do one other thing. When my first trip to Peru was in 2010. I think you went there in 2009?
End of 2009, yeah.
Okay, so you've been there about 6-7 months. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go down there and get the full experience. So the first thing that I did is I looked up like the most famous Peruvian poet, and I found this guy. I don't know how to say his name. Cesar Vallejo
is Cesar the Vallejo.
Cesar Vallejo. So
perfect. Okay. Pronunciation.
It's very uncomfortable for me to do. So I'm going to read. Here's my experience. I think the listeners will have the same reaction I did when my book came from Amazon. And, you know, I read poetry, but this, well, let me just read this. Okay, this is his most famous poem, Black Stone on a White Stone. Have you heard this?
No, I haven't.
Okay,
you haven't? Listened to it for the first time.
Okay, well, I'm a great reader of poetry. You're just going to be blown away. I will die in Paris with a rainstorm on a day I already remember. I will die in Paris, and I don't shy away, perhaps on a Thursday, as today is in autumn. It will be Thursday, because today, Thursday, as I prose these lines, I've put on my humeri, is that like a cigar thing, in a bad mood, and today, like never before, I've turned back with all of my road to see myself alone. I have to say his name here in this next part. Cesar Vallejo has died. They kept hitting him. Everyone, even though he does nothing to them, they gave it to him hard with a club, and hard also with a rope. Witnesses are the Thursday days, and the humorous bones, the solitude, the rain, the roads. Dot, dot, dot. So, I got a book full of that, because I ordered his complete poems.
So that's a Peruvian poet, and now you can imagine the kind of mind that I study the Bible with on a daily basis.
Is it like that?
Well,
for real?
No, it's not that deep.
But I tell you,
there are poets in Peru, though. Poetry is pretty popular there. So, but maybe they're influenced by him.
Well, I don't mean to make light of him, because he is a giant intellect. He died, and I did like a lot of his stuff. It's hard to kind of break into, because it's surrealism. There's a lot of dream imagery and vision imagery and symbolism, but that says something. I mean, Peru should be a good place to find the kind of stuff we're looking for if their major poet, their number one poet, is at least native poet, is a guy who's into surrealism, because what he's doing is he's saying there's a reality, I can feel it, I can't explain it, the closest I can come to it is symbolism. Kind of like in the Book of Revelation, there's a reality, we can feel it, it's there, it can't be communicated to our limited minds, and so we have symbols instead of, you know, just straight literal language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something I've seen, you know, and people, I think all over the world, like the existential questions, especially right now, but mm-hmm. I've received so many, and there's this idea that true wisdom comes from within, that there's a discovery process, finding out who one really is discovering better what the universe is. So there's a lot of Gnosticism in Peru and in Cusco as well. There's a big movement there. And so, like you're saying, without getting too deep too early into all this, but there's this search for something else besides the material world and what we can empirically sense. There's something else out there.
Yeah, I think that's what Vallejo and all poets do, is they try to use a special language. I don't want to get hung up on that. I just thought that was a good example of, and I want to encourage people, you know, don't think that everything is American. I think we make a mistake of that, at least those of us who live in America. And I was talking to you about an assumption that people make about South America, that South America is just like Mexico. And they'll even talk about, and this is a really bad thing to do, listeners, but they talk about any person from south of the Rio Grande as being Mexican, mm-hmm. or Spanish.
Yeah, Spanish is called Mexican.
Yes,
sometimes.
The
so
language.
Have I learned Mexican? That's a question I get.
Have you learned Mexican? Spain is in Europe, first of all, and a person from Spain is Spanish.
Yeah.
Mexico is one of many countries in Central America. You live in South America, the continent.
And I think, I may be wrong, but I think Mexico is not in Central America.
Oh, really? Is it North America?
North America, yeah.
Because of the that little hangdown thingy.
Yeah.
It's the separate. Yeah. Is Central America a... That's just a region. That may be a part of North America. Who knows?
Yeah,
we did not prepare for this.
Yeah, I think you separate Central America from Mexico. I think that's right. I feel good about that part.
Which makes my point even more, that we need to learn more about South America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like people that talk about Africa as if that's a country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's from Africa. Mm-hmm. Well, what part? There's hundreds of countries there. Mm-hmm. So you're from Peru, which is very different from Venezuela, from Brazil, from Argentina, and many other countries there.
Can you name them all?
There's all the Ecuador.
You don't have to. You're
the
on
one that gets me is it Paraguay?
Yeah.
Paraguay.
And then there's Uruguay.
See, I would have missed that one.
Yeah. It's the smallest one there. So.
Yeah. Oh, Chile. Yeah. I say Chile. It's Chile.
Chile, yeah.
Chile. See, I can't do that around here. It sounds pretentious. Yeah. Not from you, because right. You're from there right now. So whenever this idea, let's get back to the idea. Does that spark any examples to your mind in language, in artifacts, culture, art, literature? I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but...
No.
Can you think of anything?
I think, backing up and giving a little bit more context on the whole idea in the culture, the Peruvian culture. And first of all, I want to start off by saying I am not an expert on this stuff. I actually plan on doing a little bit of research, just brushing up on a few things and reminding myself what I've heard in the past. But as you said earlier, with a bunch of kids, we just didn't have time to do all that. But I am not an expert at this. I have learned in the last several years a few things, obviously, in working with the people there and talking with them and church planning. So a lot of interesting things. But Peru is in the Andes. It's a Andean country. And there's something about a mountain culture being closed off from the rest of the world. A lot of people say the people reflect kind of its surroundings. And so you see a closed surroundings in the area from the Andes Mountains. We live 11,500 feet in the air. And because of that, you see kind of a cold, closed people, which is, it sounds a lot worse than what it really is. It's a great people. I admire the Peruvians a lot, the people in Cusco.
They're very, use the word cold, and I know what you're saying in terms of isolation, but they're also very warm, inviting.
Very warm and friendly, very social.
I've been to other parts of the world where Americans are just hated,
mm-hmm.
any foreigners, and My two trips there, everybody's just been so friendly going over there.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great place, and maybe some have gone to Machu Picchu. So you've been to Cusco. You have to go to Cusco, where we live and work. But I guess why I said that was to say that I think when you get in a context like that, where people there are so homogeneous, maybe is the word, where it's not so much a mixed culture as you see in a lot of other places in Latin America. I think the culture's stronger. I think the folklore's stronger. It's deeper there. And so
that makes sense.
These people are a very cultural centered, oriented, and very very convicted in their folklore. And there's a lot of folklore. They use that word, folklore. And it's deep in folklore. So a lot of interesting things have happened in Cusco over the course of several years. I should mention, too, if you know about Machu Picchu, then you already know that this is the center of the Inca Empire. Mm-hmm. So over 500 years ago, this place was occupied and conquered by the Spanish. And since that time, there's been a mix between, from the beginning, Spanish colonialism and the Inca Empire. And now we see what they call mestizo, which is kind of a mix between the Spanish and the Incas. And so you'll see Spanish last names and Inca last names, which is kind of interesting. So everywhere, it's just kind of this dichotomy of Spanish.
Great word.
And Spanish and Quechua. I think I've heard the word dichotomy on every podcast, so I thought I'd throw it out there.
You have to use it at least once a month.
Done.
So we got February taken care of, or whatever. I don't know when I'm going to publish this.
But thinking about that, you know, there is so much to be said. And I guess, you know, for the purpose of this topic, we could start at the beginning. Like you were talking about, this really interesting quote from Tolkien and its impact on C.S. Lewis. This idea of a true myth, you know, something that we always felt. And we always imitated, even if we didn't specifically recognize it, you know, or someone, as we know, the gospel has to be shared. So we didn't hear it and it wasn't articulated specifically to us. We imitated it through culture and through art and through just religion, obviously.
Yeah.
And so a lot of folklore can be learned in Cusco in regards to this true myth, I guess we could call it, or they were the imitations of this true myth. And one is, you know, creation. It seems like every culture has some story of creation. Well, the Incas imagined creation, their origin coming from the east in the area where now Bolivia and Peru meet, in this lake that's called Lake Titicaca. And it was where this mother god and father god came from the actual lake and entered into the Cusco region. And from there was established a new people and a new culture. And so
that's the creation of...
That's kind of the creation of the Inca
kingdom.
Uh-huh,
yeah. But they believed in... They didn't worry over, like, the very first thing. They just thought, you know, here's the origin of Inca people.
As far as I know, you know, there may be, as I said earlier, I haven't dug deep into these things, and even the people I've heard it from, they know kind of the familiar stories, but I don't know if anyone aside from an expert in these things, but this is what's shared and what's known in Cusco about what the Incas believed. And there's still some who believe these things. I should mention that too, that there are some who continue in the Inca religion. But, you know, this happened because they knew there had to be a starting point. There had to be an origin. And so they created this. They felt it, and so they imagined that
human beings don't, they're just not satisfied with just being in the present. You know, I know a lot of people work at that, and Buddhists work at that. But they, you know, because we're wired this way, we want to dwell upon our creator and our origins And I think that's, you know, I don't know that there's a civilization that doesn't have creation myths. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They come in all shapes and sizes, but all of them have them. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. What about the desire? There, you know, Cusco's in the mountains, as you said. And there's this desire to be up high, to be more religious. Mm. Which is something I noticed when I went over there and visited Machu Picchu. And even the tour guide said something about it, how religious people always seem to think the higher we are, the closer we are to God or to whatever. And it made me think of Jeroboam, actually, who built the high places to try to make a substitute for the temple in Jerusalem. Mm. You know, he went to the highest points he had in the northern kingdom of Israel. And so that's a culture very far removed from Inca culture. But you go to Inca culture and they go to peaks. You know, Machu Picchu is what we've got left. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure there were a lot that had been destroyed mm-hmm. by the Spanish conquerors yeah. and others.
That's really interesting. You know, like you're saying in scripture, it's like the any pagan religion has some common characteristics, and one of them seems to be this, you know, God yeah. exists in the highest point. Mm-hmm. And we look at the Samaritan woman in John 4, you know, she had this idea that God existed on a mountain. Which one, in Jerusalem or this Mount Gerizim, I think mm-hmm. it was. So there's that idea too. And
they
certainly
had a temple up there. Mm-hmm. The Samaritans had, when they reorganized after, you know, all the moving around by the empires, they built a temple on Gerizim that had been destroyed by the time of Jesus, but they were still worshiping up there. Mm. You know, got to get up high. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I'm not really sure I understand what the urge is or why we think above for heaven and down for hell. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe it just has to do with the symbolism of, you know, majesty above, soaring up above, mm-hmm. You know, being higher. We say, when we say somebody is greater, we think of them in terms of being higher, mm-hmm. exalted, lifted up. Mm-hmm. All that language is used of greater beings and greater glory. And maybe that's what it is. Mm-hmm. But we think of God, you know, he doesn't dwell above us. I mean, what is above us? You know, above this oversimplification, but what's above China is below us, mm-hmm. but they're probably pointing up at the sky too. Mm-hmm. So it's not really a directional thing. It's another dimension that we're talking about.
Yeah.
But that's how all people, you know, think of higher glorious things. And then the corrupt and the sinful and the dark is down low, mm-hmm. underneath.
Well, that's why we come up with the great beyond, you know.
Yeah.
And think about that idea of the great beyond. The great beyond never was represented by dirt, you know, yeah. the core of the earth or anything like that. Mm-hmm. There's other ideas and folklore about that, but it's about
not here.
The heavens. You know,
it's
you know.
Kinda, yeah.
yeah. But there's a lot of that in the Andean culture and religion as well, in thinking about the great beyond or this the heavens idea, or up in the mountains. There's actually, in Cusco, where we are, it's a, as I mentioned, an old, old city before Spanish colonization that existed with the Incas. And so they designated three major mountain peaks around it. So there's what's known now as Veronica. There's another one that's called Ausangate. And there's another one called Salcantay. And these three are kind of strategically, not placed, but located around Cusco. And they're seen as protectors. So these mountains are kind of protectors from the Inca, mm-hmm. or for the Incas. And there was believed that, and still believed today, that a spirit lives in those mountains. So mm-hmm. up in these mountains, if you're in Cusco, if you're looking up, you're in Cusco, 11,000. You're looking up about 20,000 feet, and up in these mountains are spirits called the Apu, and they live in these mountains. And they come down, according to the people in Cusco today, some, they still come down, and they affect day-to-day life. And you know, again, we talked about pagan religion. Another thing about pagan religion is that's distinct from Christianity is pagan religion exists for the people, whereas Christianity exists to glorify God.
Yeah, it's a way to try to manipulate
right.
God, yeah. Which, you know, they see all this natural phenomenon. This is just textbook animism, what mm-hmm. you described mm-hmm. with the Apu. Is
yeah.
that the name?
Apu, yeah.
Apu.
Apu sounds, I don't know, like yeah. another language or something.
Okay, not to me, but I need to study more Spanish.
But
is that Spanish or is that?
It would be Quechua.
Quechua. So Quechua explain language. Quechua.
So Quechua is the old language that was spoken by the Inca. And there's different variations of it. And even in Bolivia, there were the others who were contemporary to the Incas called the Aymara. But it sounds somewhat similar, the Quechua language. And so it's a language that's still spoken by a lot of individuals who live in Peru. And in fact, we assume those who move beyond the assumption that Mexican is spoken in Peru, we assume that Spanish is spoken by everyone in Peru. But really, there are many in Peru who don't speak Spanish. They just speak Quechua. Because mm-hmm. this is such a, as I mentioned, a closed off part of Latin America where you don't see as much mixing with other cultures and other cultures and people.
Is that a derivation of what the Incas spoke?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's as close as we can come to what they were speaking before the conquistadors came to Peru and tried to wipe out every last vestige of that culture.
Definitely. It's who knows how close it is, but we hear as we're there that this was the language spoken by the Inca. And so it had to be put in written form, it had to be spelled out. And it's so, somewhat, relatively speaking, it's new in its written form. It's so new that you can see Quechua words written with different consonants sometimes. You know, sometimes they'll use mm-hmm. a C, sometimes a K, sometimes a Q. So
you're
still trying to settle in to the understood, mm-hmm. accepted way to write things. But the Apu is really interesting because, as I mentioned, it doesn't exist to worship necessarily, although they're worshipped. It exists more for the benefit of mankind, of the Peruvians. So if you need something, you sacrifice to the Apu. If you are sick, you ask the Apu. Some examples of that. The coca leaf, where we get cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
The coca leaf is very common in Cusco. And so a lot of people still today, every year in the month of August, they do what's called paga tierra. And so they take a coca leaf and they do sacrifices with the coca leaf. And so they may bury a few things around one of the higher regions of the Cusco area, or they may do some other things. And there was a custom among the Inca to signal with the coca leaf towards the Apu. And I don't know all the details about that, but it's kind of interesting what they did as far as sacrifices and the coca leaf and the Apu. Something mm-hmm. else that's really interesting that I learned just a year ago, more or less, was a custom called Alto Mesayo. And I don't know if I said all that exactly right, but that's the idea. And what they would do, what they still do today, they have areas designated by shaman in parts of the city where it may be a small house or a living room or something like that. And they believe in the Apu in the mountains that you can call them down into these houses. And so this is kind of the equivalent to our spirit readings here in palm readings mm-hmm. or something like that here in the States.
But these are the gods behind nature, basically, not the dead. Are you talking about the dead? The spirits of the dead?
You know, that's a good question. Honestly, don't know. I know they're not seen as deity in the same way as we see, you know, God, the mm-hmm. living God.
Mm-hmm.
But these are spirits. And I've always understood that they're not spirits of the dead. But I may be wrong in that. But these are spirits that live in the mountains, and something in the great beyond, you know, something beyond here in this life. And what they do is they set out, they get together, and it could be 20, 30 different strangers that just come together. They pay 20 soles, which is the currency there, at the door. It's mm-hmm. about $6 or $7 a piece. They pay to get in, and they sit down, and they have set out there food and wine and just different sacrifices for the spirit. They turn out the lights, and one person who's there, who is running the show, you know, he calls out to the spirit. The spirit comes down, and you can hear the spirit eating and drinking the wine. You can hear all these things in the dark because they've turned out the lights. And then you hear a spirit call out to the individuals who have paid to get in. What do you need? What is your wish? Basically, what are your prayers is what a Christian would say. But the individuals who've paid, they talk. They do a voice. And I don't know what the voice is like. I've never paid the $6 or $7 to get there. But there's customs like this, and there's shaman outside the city. And there's a lot of practices with the coca leaves. A lot of religious practices that go on, and the understanding is
trying to commune with something,
trying
someone,
to reach out, yeah,
knowing that someone is there, but just not knowing the truth, we're running out of time here. Tell me about the Inca cross. When I was there was a lot of talk about that, which maybe, I mean, I know I was a tourist, so, you know, the tour guides tell the usual stories, but I saw some really fascinating things, and one thing that, you know, I thought was really interesting was the Inca cross, and you see it in a lot of places, especially you see it in a lot of the ruins, so it was a real thing. It's not just a tourist attraction. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, it was a symbol, the understood symbol. You know, we could talk about symbols too in religion. You mentioned Revelation earlier, so this was in the Inca culture too, and so instead of explaining a lot of things, they would just put symbols in their architecture and in their textiles, and that represented a whole world of meaning to them. And so one was the biggest one was the Inca cross, and three was a significant number for them. And so you saw three chief animals in the Inca culture or in that region, and you still see it today: the condor, the puma, and the serpent. And the serpent not so much in Cusco, but in the jungle area. And these represented the three different realms. The condor was this spirit world, again, the heavens. Yeah. The puma was kind of the living. So it was kind of the present world, and then the serpent was the realm of the dead. And so you could see the Inca cross. You could see three kind of different levels.
It almost looks
there.
Like a pyramid, a two-dimensional pyramid with like made in Tetris or something. Yeah. You know, it's,
well, I guess if you could picture just a cross that has equal arms on it, and you could add one more step in there to each side of it. And you could see the three there. And so that symbolized a lot of things for the Incas, but you could see the animals mixed in there. And you talked about the Inca cross and their architecture. You would see these animals in their architecture too, especially the serpent. You saw the serpent in a lot of different places.
Yeah.
And this represented, you know, the sun god, the moon god, which was Inti and Kia. You would see those two in there as well, mixed into that idea of the Inca cross. So it's kind of interesting.
Well, there's a lot more to say, and maybe we can do this again sometime. As you're wrapping things up over there, Barton's coming back to the States at the end of this year. Maybe you can, when you see things, write them down. Next time we get together, we can have a part two on this.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about
scratching the surface. Yeah, I feel like
there's the mixing of the Inca culture and the Catholic religion and what all that had. There were some really interesting things, and still today, a lot of the interesting things of that mixing the culture there.
So. Yeah, I started to bring that up before. There's just so much to do, and I've learned not to rush it because I need episodes. So we'll write this down and do it some other time. But I really appreciate it. I know we all got to get back to taking care of kids, and you got to pack up and go somewhere else tonight. So I appreciate you coming. Really interesting stuff, and look forward to maybe doing it again sometime.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. I'm excited about being back.